I'm a desperate man. Send lawyers, guns and money. This shit has hit the fan.
Hello everyone, this is Bob Main and welcome to another episode of today's Survival Show, where it is my goal to help you harness the power of choice, to live life the way you want to live it on your own terms and strengthen your resolve. And as Teddy Roosevelt once said, do what you can with what you have where you are. You are tuning into a practical show. If you're a first-time listener or relatively new to the show, first of all, let me welcome you. Thank you for tuning in. This is a practical show. I don't get involved in a whole lot of conspiracy theories. I don't get involved in a whole bunch of tinfoil hat kind of stuff. We talk about what we can do right now to help thrive today so that we can survive tomorrow. And what I mean by that is what you do today matters. And we talk about practical ideas and common sense. I keep this rooted in common sense. You'll find out when I go through the material how this is more common sense type of stuff. And if you are a long time listener, as always, I appreciate your support. This show has hit a record nearly 400 listeners every time using some kind of a feed burner device or some kind of an RSS feed to listen to the show. And thank you. Oh, there's been over 50,000 downloads to today's Survival Show. As long as you folks keep listening, I'm going to go ahead and keep putting out good episodes to the best of my ability. So thank you very much. This is episode number 77, and I'm on the road. If some of you are listening to this saying, hey, I hear some background noise, I do the best I can to keep the background noise out, but I'm in my vehicle. I'm on a business trip. My full-time job takes me around two states, about 47,000 miles per year. So I take advantage of a little bit of the windshield time while I'm driving to bring you some of these survival episodes here. And this happens to be the 77th time that I'm doing this. So we're going to talk about money today. I am continuing my series on threat assessment, and we're going to talk about money. There's been so much buzz going on the news about all this healthcare, and now it's pretty much behind us, I think. Although, if you've noticed, there's been a lot of states saying, we don't want to force people to buy health insurance, so there's lawsuits. So I guess this thing is not over yet. But I want to take a little bit of a departure and talk about money. And, you know, folks, let's face it. This healthcare stuff is going to cost us all a bunch of money. And not only is it going to cost us a bunch of money, it's going to cost the country a ton of money. And I'm very, very uncomfortable about the direction the country is headed financially. And so what motivated me to do this episode is how uncomfortable I am about how things are going financially. I'm going to talk about not a bunch of politics, and I'm not even going to talk about too much about what our pinheads in Washington are doing to spend the money. I'm going to talk about you and me and what we can do differently. I do want to tell you, I'm going to lay a little groundwork as to what's happening. You do need to understand what's happening. I've done some research, and I'm going to cover some reality for you as to what's really going on out there, what a lot of the media doesn't want to tell you. And I've got some audio clips from some experts. Just so you know, it's not just me talking. I have a couple of experts that study this stuff, that study the global financial markets and what's going on. And I'm going to play a couple of audio clips for you to listen to and let you form your own opinion as well. So let me dedicate episode 77 to finances and the threat that we face. And I'm driving to Oklahoma to do some business. And since I'm going to Oklahoma, let me start off the show by talking about a famous person from Oklahoma by the name of Will Rogers. I'm sure most of us have heard of Will Rogers, an excellent philosopher. He was very famous for his daily telegrams that pretty much shaped a lot of people's thinking. And it's amazing some of the stuff that he said. And perhaps nothing made Will Rogers more famous than his daily telegrams. Okay? They were syndicated in more than 500 newspapers, and including at least one paper in every major city. What he did is he did a lot of short daily columns, and he had a lot of down-to-earth stuff to say. He did a lot of humor. He had a lot of humorous takes on some of the current events of his day. He had a lot of humorous events and humorous takes on everyday issues and some of life's basic questions. And Will Rogers was first published in the New York Times in 1926. And his daily telegrams continued all the way up until he died in August of 1935. So the time period we're talking about, 1926 to about 1935. It's important to remember that. Throughout the years that he was on the air, he shaped a lot of public opinion, and he had a lot of impact on government policies, and he influenced a lot of people's perception. And a lot of readers were known to first read his Daily Telegram every morning and then read the rest of the newspaper. They wanted to hear what Will Rogers had to say. Let me share with you three of his Daily Telegrams, because it's going to speak to the subject matter of today's show. If you got a dollar, soak it away. Put it in a savings bank. Bury it. Do anything but spend it. Spending, when we didn't have it, put us where we are today. Saving, when we've got it, will get us back to where we was before we went cuckoo. That was Daily Telegram number 1353 in 1930. Now, is that a little bit similar to what's going on today? Here's another one. It looks like the financial giants of the world have bungled as much as the diplomats and politicians. This would be a great time in the world for some man to come along that knew something. That was Will Rogers in 1931. Here's another one. This one's going to shock you. There is two things that can disrupt business in this country. One is war, and the other is a meeting of the Federal Reserve Board. That was Will Rogers in 1929. And it's amazing how his telegrams are timeless, aren't they? They apply so much to what's going on today. So before I jump into the main topic matter, I wanted to use that to set the stage. Let me knock out just a couple of announcements first, and then I've got a whole lot more information for you on finances. First announcement I want to make is the website, todayssurvival.com. The second is the forum website, todayssurvival.com/forum. Good people on the forum, folks. Get involved. 416 members now. We're an active group. We are small by lots of internet standards, but we're growing slowly but surely, and there's good quality people on there. It's a well-policed board. In other words, you're not going to be subject to a lot of personal attacks. If you're kind of new at this stuff, we welcome you. You'll find a lot of people who are real open to new folks, especially those of you who are new to getting prepared and new to the survival mindset. The Survival Activist Club, I want to add a little extra to that. You know, a lot of us might be really frustrated with the political process right now, and I can understand that. So if writing a politician is not your cup of tea, let me add a spread the word element to the Survival Activist Club. There are a bunch of books. If you go to the SAC contest forum, go to the thread on the forum and read the rules. And also you'll notice down there I've published some of the prizes that some people of our, members of our forum have so generously donated. Thank you, by the way, to those of you who did that. Spread the word contest. Here's what I mean by that. You're also going to score 1 point, and 1 point is going to get you one entry into the drawing that's going to take place on May 30th by spreading the word. Talk to people about this show. Talk to people about our forum. Talk to people about the new YouTube channel. By the way, folks, check out today's Survival Show's YouTube channel. Go to YouTube and then youtube.com/user/todayssurvival. Or just search for the YouTube channel Today's Survival. I'm going to be posting some videos from time to time on there. Subscribe to the channel. If you refer somebody to either this podcast or the forum or to the YouTube channel, all they have to do is say they were referred by you. Just give them your username. Okay, you got to be a member of our forum to be in this contest anyway, so you probably set up a username when you join the forum. Just tell them they were to send me an email and have them tell me who referred you, who referred them to the show, excuse me. As long as they use your username, you're going to score a point. That's the simplest way that I could think of to do it. Just send us referrals, and you'll be going into the drawing. Now, M. Barnattle, who's one of the members who has donated a couple of books, I'm going to do something special for him shortly. He's probably referred more people to this show and this forum than anybody. I've kind of lost count. Maybe he's been keeping count, but I've lost count. He's done a tremendous amount. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to do something special for him on the side. He can still participate in this contest, by the way. So, M. Barnettle, if you're listening, and I know you do, you listen a lot, keep referring folks and have them make sure that they were referred by you and tell me so, and you'll score a point. Those of you who have written your elected officials, you can keep doing that, even those of you who want to do that. There's still a whole lot more subjects out there to be writing these people about. You're going to score a point every time you send me a response from one of the pinheads that you write to. So get that over to me as well, and let's see if we can get this contest rolling, spreading the word and also writing our elected officials. Okay, and if this may sound a little bit confusing to you, I apologize, but I will go ahead and add to the thread where it says SAC contest on the forum and on the main website, and I'll reiterate these details on the forum. All right, let's jump into the main topic. Okay, let's talk about one reason why we're in the financial mess. We as a country. First. And again, I'm not going to inject politics into this. I'm just going to talk about reality. You know, I mean, it's no secret, unemployment. And you've heard me talk about one of the things that I prepare for, one of the things that's near the top of my list is I prepare for loss of job. Not that I have any sign that I'm going to lose it, but you never know. In this climate, we never know when we could lose our job. Let me ask you a question. What kind of a position would you be in if you or your spouse lost their job? Okay, can you go 90 days without a paycheck? Can you go 120 days without a paycheck? You know what the percentage of Americans is? What percentage represents the number of people who can go 90 days without a paycheck? Or even 90 days with a severe reduction in income? Maybe you and your spouse both work, but could you go 4 months or so without your spouse's income? You know what the answer to the question is? Less than 3% of Americans today can go 90 days without a paycheck, or can go 4 months without both spouses working. You know, folks, that's a shame. And I'm going to give you some ideas and some tips on how to do that. But I don't know how you can call yourself a survival-minded person if you fall into the group where you could not go and survive and exist and eat and provide the basic necessities for yourself for 3 months, just simple 90 days without any income coming in. This is why I'm such a big proponent of storing food. Okay, because that's one step that you could do to make yourself self-sufficient and sustainable for 90 days if you didn't have a job. And folks, in today's climate, it can take you a heck of a lot more than 90 days to find a job. So you probably need to set a goal of going 6 months to a year without having any income coming in. Okay, might sound a little bit onerous right now, but just work towards it little by little. Set the goal first of all for 2 weeks, and then 30 days, and then 60, then 90, then 6 months. Okay, baby steps, and I'm going to talk more about baby steps. But employment's what we have to look at. And the reason we're in this mess is because of unemployment. And the most important area of employment to look at is manufacturing jobs. Okay, increasing manufacturing is the only way, I believe, for our country to truly recover from where we're from, the predicament that we're in right now. Okay, that would allow us to cut down on inflation, and we can start exporting real products out of this country instead of exporting the money that we print. You know, but the unfortunate part about the employment situation is the United States lost 2.1 million manufacturing jobs over the last 2 years. The main areas of increasing employment recently has been healthcare. Let me say that again. The main areas of increased employment has been healthcare and government jobs. Healthcare and government jobs. Okay, the healthcare industry and the government, the two largest employers in the United States today. Now, nothing against those of you who work for the government or those of you who work in the healthcare industry, but they're non-productive jobs. What I mean by non-productive jobs is they're not producing a tangible product that can be sold or exported. I'll say that again. They're not producing a tangible product that can be sold or exported. I'm not saying that what you do is not important if you work in the healthcare industry or you work for the government, but it's not something that can be exported by our country. It means that they don't produce anything that can be sold to people in countries overseas or here in the U.S. Okay? And what makes matters worse is these jobs are not being created due to a strengthening in our economy. They're being created due to the artificial, temporary, and destructive stimulus package. And they're forcing our country to go deeper and deeper into debt and create massive inflation. Let me give you an example of what I'm talking about. Okay, I like to talk about real examples. Those who receive a paycheck for the non-productive healthcare or government jobs, they compete against all the other Americans out there for the purchasing of consumer goods. Okay, so they're consumers just like all the rest of us. They are competing against you for the purchasing of the consumer goods out there, but they're not helping to generate an increase in the supply of the goods that we purchase. That's the best way that I can put it. They're increasing the demand for consumer goods, but the people who work for the government, people who work in the healthcare industry, are not increasing the supply. And when the demand goes up and the supply stays the same or shrinks a little bit, the price of everything that we buy increases at an astronomical rate that's unimaginable, and that's called massive inflation. And probably the biggest threat that we have right now. So since I'm doing threat assessment, the biggest threat we have, folks, is inflation. A lot of Americans right now are not really all that concerned, unfortunately, about inflation, because they believe that if the price of the goods go up, so will their wages and everything's going to balance out. If you believe that, please get your head out of the sand, folks. It's not true. All right? Those kinds of people don't understand that the standard of living in America has been declining for over a decade. I'll say that again. The standard of living in America has been declining for over a decade. You might be scratching your head and say, what are you talking about, Bob? Okay, let me explain. Sure, we have plasma TVs. We have cell phones. All right, we have all the modern technological conveniences that are afforded to us today. And we have the internet and all that. And if we didn't have all those things, you might not be able to listen to this podcast. But our lives are gradually becoming harder and harder to live. It's becoming harder and harder for a family of four to pay the bills. Years ago, a family of four only needed one income. Now it takes two, and many families of four, even with two incomes, can't even survive on that. It's becoming more and more difficult for the middle class to survive. 20 years ago, a father with an average job was able to support an entire family on one income. And as I mentioned, today, both parents have to work. And they're still not able to support their family without going deeply into debt and racking up credit cards and having huge mortgages and car loans and college loans. The wages, folks, have not kept pace with the inflation, and they're not going to in the foreseeable future. And unfortunately, all we've seen is an increase in the debt to meet some of the demand from the inflation. And by simply providing everybody with health insurance, that's not going to cure the problem. Okay, that's only the tip of the iceberg. So this notion of, well, we're going to fix the financial problem in this country just by giving everybody health insurance, that's not going to solve the inflation problem, folks. Putting people back to work. Are you listening, politicians? Putting people back to work is what's going to help solve the problem. That's part of it. There's more to it. I'm going to get to that. But that's an example of what I'm talking about. And let's talk about baby boomers for a minute, because you've heard the term baby boomers kicked around a lot, I'm sure. Okay, here's a few scary facts. And again, I'm not trying to alarm you. I say I don't get into tinfoil hat type of thinking. These are the facts I'm about to cover. This is not pie in the sky stuff. But it's the truth. You can't escape the truth. As Winston Churchill once said, and I love to quote, "The truth is incontrovertible. Malice may attack it. Ignorance may deride it. But in the end, there it is." That's what Winston Churchill said about the truth. With the baby boomers beginning to retire, listen to this. The decline in our standard of living is about to accelerate even more than we've seen in the last 10 years. The average American peaks in their spending at around 46 years old. Okay? The average American peaks in the amount of money that they spend at about the age of 46. You know what the scary thing is? The last baby boomer is going to turn 46 this year. Okay, I'm in the baby boom generation. Therefore, a major drop-off in consumer spending is coming. A major drop-off. We're already starting to see a lot of it today. Here's what's even more critical. Beginning the next decade, in the next 10 years, 1.5 to 2 million Americans are going to apply for Social Security every year until 2026. Nearly 2 million people are going to apply for Social Security until 2026, and it's only been about a third of that every year during the last 10 years. Okay, so the number is going to triple. The number of people applying for Social Security is going to triple. The tax receipts to the government are going to fall off of a cliff. And the reason I say that is because it's the consumption of goods and services. It's the consumption of goods and services that generate revenues to the government, not income tax. When people buy things, and when they pay a sales tax, and when they consume goods and services, that's what puts more money into the federal government coffers, folks. And this is something that politicians from both parties, I don't care what party you're from, this is what they can't seem to understand. Putting people back to work and getting people to consume is what puts money back into the economy. And even those of us who are survival-minded people, we consume something. Okay, we may consume less than other people out there. And I'm not trying to say that you should all of a sudden become this huge consumer, because our goal as survivalists is to become more independent and more self-sustaining and more self-sufficient so that we're not consuming as much. But you can't go through life not consuming or buying anything. The problem is the consumption of goods and services, because you've got the last of the baby boomers that have now hit the peak of their spending. That consumption is going to fall off of a cliff. And at the same time that the spending decreases, the government entitlement for Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid is going to go through the roof. And what do you think that means? When the spending goes down and the money going to the government severely drops off, and the number of people asking the government for benefits dramatically increases, it doesn't take a rocket scientist to figure out what happens next. It's not going to be a pretty sight. And a collapse is imminent. And again, I don't mean to sound paranoid, but if we stay on this track that we're on right now, something has to give. So let me shut up now. I don't want you to just hear from me go on and on about this. I want you to hear from an expert. I want you to hear from someone who studies global finances for a living. I want you to hear an audio clip from Don McIlvaney. If some of you have not been listening to Don McIlvaney, if you don't know who he is, go to McIlvaney.com. McIlvaney.com. He's got a weekly podcast. He also puts out a publication called the McIlvaney Intelligence Advisor. He's a very well-respected person when it comes to the art of investing in gold as well. But Don McIlvaney is very well respected when it comes to the global financial picture. So here's a brief audio clip, and I want you to see if we listen to Don McIlvaney right now. I want you to hear him, and you tell me if he echoes some of what I've just spent the last 20 minutes talking about. And then I've got some comments for you when this is over. So here you go. Here's Don McIlvaney, and then I'll be back on with a few comments.
The U.S. economic and financial system, we believe, is on the brink. And even though that's not widely understood today, we think that there will be events that happen in the next 6 to 12 to 18 months that will definitely help people understand things are not good. I want to talk for a few minutes then about some negative fundamentals, which we think at this point cannot and should not be ignored. The first one of those fundamentals is there is cheap overproduction. The world is massively overproducing everything at viciously competitive prices. China, India, and Asia have become forces for cheap overproduction. And I can tell you that China could produce every single manufactured product in the world that every person in the world consumes, just China. So there's massive overcapacity for everything worldwide. And that's one of those fundamentals that's not going to change, and it's going to affect everything. Over 2 billion low-wage workers have entered the global workforce, China, India, Asia, Eastern Europe, etc., and they work for wages 75 to 95% less than Americans, and that's not going to change. U.S. factories must now move overseas to compete. American businesses can't produce products as cheap as China, India, Asia, etc., so to survive, they must move their manufacturing facilities out of the country, permanently eliminating millions or tens of thousands of U.S. jobs. A few years ago, I think it was over a decade ago, you saw Chrysler shut down a factory and move it to Mexico. A few years later, they dissembled that factory, put it on a boat or several boats, and sent it over and reopened it in China. Even Mexico can't compete with China. Okay, so these are realities that are we're going to face the rest of our lives. Okay, the U.S. middle class is being eliminated as millions of formerly well-paid white and blue-collar workers are forced to low-paying jobs, such as a greeter at Walmart or McDonald's or Starbucks or what have you. Business profits are being permanently squeezed. As costs, raw materials, shipping, medical labor rise while prices fall due to global price competition and the internet. The internet actually suppresses prices and keeps you from having pricing power because everybody can shop you all over the world, and so the internet has suppressed a lot of prices. Only massive U.S. consumer consumption or overconsumption has kept the U.S. and global economy afloat in recent years. But U.S. consumers are now maxed out with debt and things and are seeing declining incomes. How many more things can you buy? How many more television sets do you need in your house? Maybe you got three or four. I bet you most of you have at least three, okay? How many DVD players do you need? How many new gadgets and gadgets? How many new cars? I mean, at what point do you say, my gosh, I'm drowning in all my stuff? Well, that's the average American today. They're drowning in their stuff, and most of them have gone massively into debt in order to accumulate all that stuff, and you finally get to the point where they just don't need any more stuff. They're maxed out on debt, and they're maxed out on things, okay? To keep U.S. consumers borrowing and spending, the Fed has created two huge inflationary bubbles over the last 10 or 12 years in stocks and in real estate. Both bubbles are now very vulnerable to a massive implosion or collapse. We saw the first bubble, the stock bubble, which the Fed helped create, starting about the middle 1990s. It was the high-tech bubble, the dot-com bubble, and so forth. And we saw what happened when it finally, and if you got my newsletter, we begged people to get out of the stock market. We begged them to get out. And starting March of 2000, going through about October of 2002, the stock market dropped $8 trillion in value. $8 trillion. A lot of investors lost 50% of their 401ks. And I got to tell you that they're not back even. In the last 6 or 7 years, the stock market is only up about 13%, about 2% a year. Okay, that's not even keeping up with inflation. But the dot-com bubble in the stock market rolled over starting in the year 2000. The Fed said, good grief, Charlie Brown, we've got to find something else. We've got to distract the people. It's kind of like when the people got restless in Rome and then he had to crank up the Colosseum and the gladiators and so forth. And so we had to distract the people so that the wealth effect didn't disappear. And so they switched. It was like a big shell game. And they got everybody to switch their attention to the real estate bubble. And then they cranked interest rates down and they cranked trillions of dollars of new liquidity into the system. And guess what? They gave us the real estate bubble. The real estate bubble and the stock bubble were the courtesy of Alan Greenspan. Alan Greenspan expanded the U.S. money supply 50% while he was in power. And so they gave us the real estate bubble. And the real estate bubble is now looking very, very iffy in many parts of the country. And we're going to come back and talk about that later. Another reality, or fundamental, foreign dollar holders are getting very nervous. We have twin $500 billion deficits. It's really not true. The real budget deficit's about $700 billion. And the real trade deficit is about $880 billion. So that's 15 to 16, or 1.5 to $1.6 trillion in the twin deficits. So our twin deficits, budget and trade, very low U.S. interest rates, a weakening U.S. stock market, and faltering U.S. economy are causing foreign dollar holders to move into other currencies. David's going to talk a lot about what's coming for the dollar and how that's going to impact gold and a lot of other things in the next few years. The Fed and foreign central banks only have one tool left to fight a global deflation, and that is their printing presses. Trillions of dollars in new liquidity are being produced to stop a global debt implosion and depression. 2 weeks ago, the Fed created $52 billion out of thin air in 1 week. In 1 week, $52 billion. Annualize that, that comes out to in excess of $2.5 trillion. They're running the printing presses like there was no tomorrow. Last week, they increased the money supply about $36.5 billion.
Okay, now let me just recap a few things there, because there were some salient points that he made that I think bear repeating. That was recorded over a year ago. Now, that budget deficit of $700 billion has now ballooned to what? About $1.5 trillion. So it's doubled. But let me just kind of review a few points here. U.S. factories have been moving their manufacturing facilities overseas, and now even Mexico can't compete with China. Folks, that creates a huge problem for us. The elimination of the United States middle class. The elimination of the middle class he talked about. That's going away. Business profits being permanently squeezed, and how the internet prevents manufacturers from having any pricing power. Now, you might think, well, that's good for us consumers, right? And I love to buy things on the internet. I think buying things on the internet is excellent. The fact of the matter is, we have to learn to understand the fact that that's going to decrease the pricing power. So what that's going to do is that's going to force manufacturers, it already is, it's been happening for years, it forces manufacturing to make things cheaper so that they can maintain their margins. Folks, businesses are in money to make, or they're in business to make a profit. There's nothing wrong with making a profit. The next time I hear some jerk hammering on U.S. corporations for making a profit, I think I'm going to scream. When businesses make profit, that's when they begin to hire people again. When they don't make money is when they don't hire people again. But because of the internet and many other forces out there, the prices are starting going down. And that's one of the reasons, folks. One of the reasons why you see companies moving jobs overseas is because they can't compete. If they made the same products here in the United States, they would have to spend four times the amount of money to make those products. You folks are not going to want to pay that price, are you? When you buy a product, you want to buy it as cheap as you can. You want to buy it for the lowest price that you can, right? And maintain decent quality? Because of the consumer's demand for lower prices, companies have no choice. We have unions here that are trying to keep the wages up. Okay, because of the unions, that's one reason. I'm not saying it's the only thing, so don't send me any emails. Those of you, don't send me an email saying that I'm hammering on unions. I'm not really hammering on unions or those of you who are involved in one. But when American workers want $35 an hour for something that really should only be about $16 an hour in pay, now you're doubling the cost of wages. And they're going to pass that on to you, the consumer. But if you don't want to pay that price as a consumer, now what are you forcing the company to do? Now you're forcing the manufacturer to find a way that they can make that for $16 an hour and still make the kind of profit that they want to make. You understand that? That's what's happening out there. That's part of the problem out there. Small part of it, but that's part of it. He also talked about U.S. consumers being maxed out with debt and having declining incomes. And when you start to see the media and the government talk about an increase in jobs, because you're going to see it coming soon, even though our unemployment is still pretty high, you're going to see them start touting this false increase in recovery, or false increase in employment. You know what that false increase in employment is from? First of all, you have a lot of people that just quit claiming unemployment. And so those people fall off of the number calculation. So that's an artificial increase right there. And some people might go back to work, but they might go back to work at half of what they were making before they lost their job. Now, those people count as a statistic. They count as a person who's gone back to work. And they're going to tout that. But the problem is that they're not making the kind of money. And even if they max themselves out with debt before they lost their job, is the government helping them pay that debt back? I don't think so. Okay. And another thing he pointed out, that Don pointed out, I thought was interesting, is that the stock market's only averaged 2% per year over the past several years. 2% a year. Even the stock market, as an investment, folks, is not keeping up with inflation. So this brings me to the obvious question. Well, what about gold? I know some of you have probably been thinking, Bob, talk about gold. All right, gold is an excellent investment. Gold should be a portion of your investment portfolio. It should be a small portion. I'm not trying to give investment advice. I am by no means a financial expert and a financial investment expert. But definitely gold should be part of your portfolio. But let me clear up some misconceptions about gold. There's a lot of people that have some misconceptions about gold that I want to point out. Some people think that the price of gold is going to go through the roof. Okay? It's going to go up, but I don't think it's going to go skyrocketing. Okay, a lot of people who think that the price of gold is going to go skyrocketing are the same people that that think this. If we see massive inflation and gold prices go through the roof like it's predicted, then wouldn't that be good for the United States? Because we have so many gold reserves out there. Okay, let me tell you what the actual gold reserves in the United States are. About 8,133 tons. Okay, now think about that. At the current gold price, our gold reserves are worth about $300 billion. Let me say that again. We have about 8,133 tons of gold. About 6% of the world's gold supply is in the United States. At the price of gold today, that's a little over $300 billion, roughly. Okay, that's rough math. But it's about, you know, between $300 and $330 billion, depending on what the price of gold is. Our budget deficit is $1.6 trillion. Our gold reserves are worth about $300 billion. Now, consider this. If we had to pay back our $12 trillion national debt by using the gold in our vaults, gold would have to be $45,000 an ounce to pay back our debt. Do you ever think the price of gold is going to go that high? Now, here's something else that's scary. Figure in the $55 trillion of unfunded liabilities that we have in our country. And I'm talking about Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid. Okay, our gold reserves, that $300 billion, $350 billion maybe on the high side, that won't even put a dent in being able to save our country from the financial collapse that's coming because of the $55 trillion of unfunded liabilities. Folks, where is our country going to get the $55 trillion from? Now, where am I going with all this? Because I said I'd talk about gold. Yes, gold is going to go up, but it's not going to go to $45,000 per ounce. You know, we're not going to be able to just use our gold reserves to pay off the debt. And the debt is going to sink us, folks. The debt is going to choke us. Yes, you should own gold. It is going to go up. As more and more people lose faith in the economic system, and as more and more people look for safe investments, yes, they are going to turn to gold. And that is going to be good for you, the individual investor, because the more people want something, the higher the price goes up. But I just wanted to clear up some myths, because I've heard some people say, well, we should just switch back completely to the gold standard, and we should use our gold reserves to help pay down some of the national debt. That's impossible. I've seen internet posts that said that. I've seen people put stuff on the internet like, you know, we could do a lot by paying off our national debt with gold and precious metals and things. So, can't happen, folks. The only way that we can balance the budget, the only way that we can pay off our country's debt is to stop spending. That's it. Plain and simple. Can't happen any other way. And I want to ask you a question listening to this show. Do you really think this country is going to stop spending money? I don't care what politician they are. I don't care from what party they are. They're not going to stop spending money. But you can. You can stop spending money. You can do what Will Rogers said in 1930. If you got a dollar, soak it away. Put it in a savings bank. Bury it. Do anything but spend it. You can take responsibility for your own financial future because the government is not going to do it, folks. The government is not going to take financial. I'm sorry, I've lost hope. Call me pessimistic. I'm usually kind of a positive guy. But after what's happened lately, I've lost hope in our government's ability to become fiscally responsible again. Maybe I'll get proven wrong. Gosh, I hope I'm proven wrong in a few years. Okay, but I just don't see it happening. So if you're putting your faith in the government, I'm really sorry for you, folks. I really am. If you're the kind of person that puts faith in government, you probably don't listen to this show. But if you just happen to be tuning in, you're gonna be sorely, sorely disappointed if you think that the government's really ever gonna wake up and quit spending so much money. We are in a huge ball of stink. That's the only way I can put it. We're in a huge ball of stink right now. Okay, and there's really not going to be much of a way out of it, but we can take personal responsibility for ourselves. And I'm going to bring this show to a close in a minute. I wanted to set the stage for episode 78. I'm going to come back to you in a couple of days with episode 78. Please tune in. I'm going to give you some good, hardcore stuff that you can do. I'm going to talk about how to set yourself up so that you can go through a financial disaster and you can mitigate some of the damage. All right, I'm going to give you some examples. I'm going to give you some examples of things that I've employed in my life. And I'm going to share with you some ideas on what you can do. Because this threat of financial collapse is coming, folks. So tune in to episode 78 in a couple of days. This is actually Tuesday, the 23rd of March, and I'll probably get this show posted tonight, so most of you will listen to it tomorrow on Wednesday, and I'll probably by Thursday, I'll have episode 78 posted, and I'm going to go over some ideas that you can start putting to work in your life right now to set yourself up pretty good financially. And so with that, I'm going to go ahead and bring this show to a close, because I think I've made the point clear about where we're headed. And you know, this isn't really, I mean, it's something to worry about, folks. It's not something to get freaked out, because truly, the answer lies inside of everybody who is listening to this podcast. The answer is taking control of our own lives, and it's what you were created to do anyway. You were created to take control and to use your free will power to control your own life anyway. So thanks for listening to episode number 77. Please tune in on Thursday or maybe early on Friday for episode number 78. Tune in and we're going to talk about what you can do to help weather the financial storm that's coming your way. My name is Bob Main, and you have just listened to episode number 77 of today's survival show, where it is my goal to help you harness the power of choice to live life the way you want to live it, no matter how much money that the government spends and how many jobs go overseas and how much your standard of living decreases. You can still live life on your own terms, and you can decide what you do, and you can strengthen your resolve. As Teddy Roosevelt said, you can do what you can with whatever you have, wherever you happen to be at the time. So thanks for listening, folks, and I'll catch you next time. Bye-bye. This shit has hit the fan. Guns and money.